You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station. The BFM Breakfast Grill. Top interviews you can't afford to miss. Presented by the CIMB Group.
Today we speak to Dato' Kenneth Hung, the Chief Executive and Managing Director of Penang-based electronics and property company GUH Holdings Berhad. Dato', welcome to the show. A bit of background, please. GUH is from Penang, incorporated in 1961, which makes it 50 years old, actually, this year, as well as being a family company. What was the original business and how did it evolve into the current one?
Yeah, I think basically it started back in 1961. There was a time itself that was it was actually incorporated. It was known as, you know, Textile Corporation last time. And it started with the trading and manufacturing of cotton yarn. And then, of course, it was listed back in 1968, you know, quite earlier years. And in 1984 itself, they started to diversify into property. And after diversifying into property itself, and of course, in the mid-80s itself, they have this economic crisis, and that was the time itself in the late 80s itself. We came in, and then we had a discussion itself with the previous former MCA president, Mr. Tan Kun Suan.
Tan Kun Suan, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And we restructured the company, and we injected two major businesses. That was actually the electronic and in the PCB and the electrical business. So, and we will actually list it back in 1994 then.
Okay, so it's been quite a few incarnations, textile being the first one.
Correct.
You started property quite early as well, as you can see.
The property is more or less inherited from the previous owner. Because when they diversified into property, we carry on with it itself. And so basically our major business will then in electronic, electrical, and then with the property coming in.
Which is kind of still what the business is right now, because 90% electronics and electrical, and then about 10% of the top line from property, yeah? But let's stay on the electronics business for now, Dato'. It's apparently printed circuit boards, communications, AV, computer, auto, home appliance, and other consumer business. Can you explain to the ordinary person the printed circuit board business and how it works?
You see, printed circuit board itself is like what the name itself says. You know, it's basically a dielectric board itself where all the circuits are actually etched into it and. And components are actually put into the board itself, and it act as kind of you know, in a way itself like a central processing unit kind of thing itself, where it's basically the brain itself to all the complex function itself that we are having now in terms of all those electronic equipment. You know, and audio video products and all those, you know.
But underlying the industry is the fact that it's quite cyclical, right? Sometimes it's quite low, sometimes it's quite high, and it tends to have quite big swings in fortune. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess it's you're right, you know, because a lot depends on festive seasons and all those, and normally. Normally, when the festive season is over, especially like you're talking about December, January, February, then that will be the low season where demand will not be so high. And then March, April, then they pick it up again. And then until maybe September, October, that will be a very peak, you know. And then after that, December it goes down again. You know?
Okay, so it's quite cyclical. Yeah. In terms of the being on the value chain, Dato.
Yeah.
Where does the PCB business stand, and do you suffer from thin margins?
Of course, depending on which class of customers itself that you're talking about, you know, and generally, if you look at any audio video product itself, the PCB board itself is only a very small component. To the total component itself that we are total product that we are talking about. So margin wise itself, A lot depends on which area. Like, for instance, in Malaysia itself, we are actually the largest manufacturer.
PCB player, yeah.
PCB player. Okay. And of course, customer itself will look at four elements itself. They will look at pricing, delivery, quality, services. But as long as you can deliver all those itself, there's still room for margin because like what I mentioned, it's a very small part of a total component that we are talking about. You see, you know.
And there's also competition because it's obviously not a new industry. It's been around a long time. Are there many rivals in Malaysia as well as overseas?
Definitely. You know, in Malaysia itself, of course, it's less competitors compared to places that we operate in China. China, of course, the place that we operate is eastern part of China, and close to what we call Shanghai in Suzhou. There itself, of course, there are more competitors. But I think with the volume or with the demand requirement itself, I think there's still a lot of room for people to actually come in and have his own share of it.
Of course, and underlying the cyclical nature of the business as well as the margin challenges, as well as the competition challenges, Dato, you've also talked about how you want to move away from Taiwanese and China clients or Chinese clients. You've said in the past that they are known to be to have low pricing and being bad paymasters. Can you explain this statement?
Yeah, of course, we sell it to all the multinationals, and those multinationals are Japanese, Koreans. They are more, of course, they are better paymasters, and also in terms of pricing, also they will be much better. And and when we talk about Chinese and Taiwanese itself, most of the companies that actually they operate are in China, and especially in China itself, you talk about longer terms of credit, you know, and also in terms of Taiwanese itself, they will definitely try to choose for you know, basically narrow down and choose the best itself that they can actually you know, the best player itself. But I think Japanese itself, they are more concerned in terms of quality. You know, pricing itself also, of course, is also a concern. But and especially if you look at the Taiwanese and Chinese customers, they are only not looking at the in terms of quality. Maybe they can forego a little bit. You know, but Japanese, Koreans, no, it's a must. You know, so pricing wise, of course, you can push it a little bit higher.
Okay, yeah. So you talk about you're selling to the main multinationals. Who are your main clients, Sato?
People like yourself, like people like Sony, Panasonic, JVC, LG. You know, Sharp, Kenwood. You know, those are our major clients.
Okay, so you actually sell it to the end manufacturers of AV products and consumer products.
Oh, yes, okay. Correct.
You've also talked in the past about moving into niche products, better pricing projects, future trend products. LEDs is one, special tuners and power supply. Can you explain this movement?
You see, as the product itself, as electronic products itself becomes more and more complex, because I think especially consumers itself wanting to have a product itself, like for instance, maybe like a smartphone, tablets, PC tablets, and all those. I think there are a lot more function itself that are required. So we have to move to those kind of niche product itself, where the board itself gets smaller. There are more holes, more you know, so that to cater to that market itself. We not only try to cater to market itself in terms of audio video, where you talk about bigger kind of a product where the whole requirement, because as the complexity in terms of functionality comes in, you will actually have a whole component requirement that you need to actually put into the board, and you need to actually have more functions.
So stuff like the I presume when you talk about tablets, you talk about the you know, Samsung, and they've got their all kinds of products, and of course, the iPad is a common one. What does it take for, in terms of expertise for GUH to move into this direction? Do you already have the engineering expertise to do so?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, we do have a research team itself put in place. We have an engineering team where all the latest equipments are there. And they will actually do the designing and all those. And, of course, some of the design itself comes from the customer, especially when you talk about Japanese or Korean multinationals and all those. They will also come up with their own design. And what we need to do is scan through some of the circuitry itself. And sometimes we come up with certain proposal to them. And of course, we learn from customers and all those where we also pick it up. So we do have the kind of expertise itself to cater to that.
We are talking to Datuk Kenneth Hung, the Chief Executive and MD of GUH Holdings Berhad. Up next, the transformation from your company as an electronics company to one of being in property and power.
Business, finance and more. BFM 89.9.
With us this morning, Datuk Kenneth Hung, the Chief Executive and Managing Director of GUH Holdings Berhad on The Breakfast Grill. Datuk, about 90% of your business on top-line revenues is from electronics and the remainder from property. But you want to reduce this contribution to about 75% over time, and some of it will come from property. Now, let's talk about your property business, and your main development is the Taman Bukit Kepayang project in Seremban. Firstly, being a Penang company, why this location? Why out of Penang and so far away?
Like what I mentioned earlier, you know, back then itself, in 1994, we actually injected the electronic and electrical sector itself in there. But the property was actually inherited from the previous owner when we did the restructuring scheme back then. They happened to have about 500 plus acres itself of land in Seremban. So what we did was we just carry on with it and continue with what they have, you know.
Okay, so it's a legacy development, yeah?
Yeah, correct.
So you've got a balance of about 108 hectares to be developed over the next 7 years. What are your plans for it?
I think for us itself is still the same. You know, we'll actually focus on landed properties, residential and commercial to do up the balance acreage itself that we have. And then, of course, we'll move on to acquire more land in Penang and Klang Valley, you know.
Okay, just as in terms of your strategy, what is GUH's traditional pricing positioning strategy? Where on the value chain are you?
In terms of how we actually price our product, of course, we have to actually compare to the competitors itself in that particular area. And in area like, for instance, in Seremban, we do have some big boys itself who are actually there, and of course we will look at their launches in terms of pricing, what products are they coming up, and how they price themselves, you know. And for us itself, of course, we being a smaller player, and of course we will look at the surrounding and then try to price it within the means itself where the buyers itself can actually afford, you know.
Okay, so you've talked about buying land in the Klang Valley, Penang Island, even on the mainland in Seberang Prai, right? In terms of target acreage and size, actually, land bank, how many more acres do you want to buy and by when?
You see, we have set aside some fund itself, and in terms, if you look at our financial itself, our gearing is basically zero, you know, and we intend to actually gear ourselves to about 50% of shareholders' fund. And currently, our shareholders' fund itself stands about almost about 390 million. So we have about 195 or 200 million there that we can actually gear ourselves. And from there, then of course we have the cash itself on hand, and that is about 100 million, 300 million. So of course, we will not allocate those 300 million. We do have plan itself going forward where we strategize ourselves. And then, of course, in terms of property, maybe we'll allocate about 60, 80 million around that region. But a lot, in terms of sizing itself, of course, it's very difficult to say, because if you go to KL, some of the pricing itself may be, in terms of land, may be very high. some places may be very low. So we will not, of course, we will not invest in very heavily and allocate and say, let's say, 200-300 million, you know, that kind of thing in land bank. We will not really do that.
So between these three regions, Penang Island, Seberang Parai, Klang Valley, and so, which is the priority area?
Basically, both are also priority. We have actually identified Penang and the island itself, the island and KL. That is actually the both places are actually priority.
Being the premium locations, yeah?
Yes.
Think
yes.
of the Penang issue, the UNESCO heritage status and about the development that's happening in the last 1 or 2 years, mm-hmm. it's been quite astounding. What's your take on the economic scene in Penang? How vibrant is it there? Can you just give a bit of background?
I think currently the situation in Penang, of course, is quite vibrant and there are a lot of happenings. Even there are launches itself that some of the developers have, you know, and it's just some of them just snatch up.
But square foot values? What kind of levels are we seeing now in, say, residential?
Residential itself... it has gone as high as like 1.5 million even for a normal lot of a 22 by 75 size, you know. Where
that's over 1,000 ringgit per square foot.
Sorry?
Is that over 1,000 ringgit per square foot?
No, it's 22 by 75. Okay, so I'm talking a lot size itself.
Okay.
Three-story link house. If it's a good area...
That's in Tanjung Bunga, yeah?
BS
Bunsiu.
And
development.
People like ENO.
ENO. So that's about 1,000 ringgit per square foot.
Yeah.
Okay, which is quite interesting from a developer's perspective. The other point to note is that you're going to plantations. You've got about 155 hectares of oil palm in Kedah, which you began harvesting in 2007. How have the yields been, Dato?
We do have two parts in terms of plantation itself, because though it's a small acreage, which is 385 acres, in terms of those matured one, which is almost about 70 acres, that is almost about 9 ton per acre, and of course those which are newly planted about 4 years, 4.5, 5 years, you know, of course the yield itself will be lower. We are actually looking at about 4-5 tons.
Is the industry average for plantation yield?
Plantation yield itself, I think, is more or less there. I think
9 or 10. Or?
Yeah, correct.
Okay, so you're right.
Some of them can achieve. Depends on location. The better yield itself, the better yield. I think you can see is maybe in places like Sabah. Sabah would actually have a better yield, you know, and maybe they can go about 10, 11, you know.
Okay, so 10, 11 would be like the premium yield already. You have talked about how you'll buy, do you want to increase your estate size to about 2,000 hectares, yeah? Is that possible? Because the big players talk about how land bank and plantation land, actually, in particular, is quite scarce in Malaysia now. They've got to go to Indonesia.
It's still possible. It's a lot depends on what kind of pricing itself we actually want to pay, you know, because right now I think an acreage itself can cost you something like 25,000, 28,000 kind of range. So if you are willing to pay the kind of pricing, I think there's still people itself who are still willing to actually sell.
We are talking to Datuk Kenneth Heng Bakti, the Chief Executive and Managing Director of GUH Holdings Berhad. Datuk, in terms of expertise in plantations as well, where do you stand, having come from electronics and property and now plantations?
You see, in terms of expertise itself, of course, we started, like what you just now mentioned, you know, we started with a small acreage, which is about 385 acres, and from there, we pick up the expertise, we put the people in place itself. That was more like a testing ground itself, trying to capture some skilled people itself, you know, and putting the team itself in place. And then only we go a little bit, a step further, and acquiring a slightly bigger size, 2,000, 3,000, you know, that kind of thing, you know.
So over time, how many percent of revenues can palm oil contribute to the business?
Percentage-wise, of course, if we move on, I think it won't be that big. You know, I think maybe you'll be looking at about a neighborhood of about 10%.
10%,
kind of region.
Okay. And then, of course, you've just signed in 4th of January, actually, PPA for and 83 million odd ringgit water treatment plant in China. Yeah. Just give us a bit of background as to the structure, you know, the shareholding structure, the joint venture details, and of course the reasons why you're going to water treatment in China.
You see, basically, you know, back then itself, we have actually strategized ourselves in this particular area. You see, because water is one of the areas itself where we are actually looking at, because we are looking at actually, in terms of strategy, we are actually looking at concessionary projects where we have assurance in terms of cash flow and all those. And China itself, they do have abundant requirement, you know, in terms of water. And of course, we do have we actually put a team of players in place, and basically, you know, those team itself basically scout around, and because of the abundance in terms of opportunities which are there, and we narrow down, and then we have we landed with this Nanjing project itself. You know.
Okay, so what is the upside? What is the profit potential of this project, Dato?
The profit potential, of course, is very good. I think if you look at the water players itself, people like Celcon, Taliwork, and all those, if you look at their financial, they are very dependent. Of course, their specialty is actually in water, and they have shown very good financial results itself coming up from there. And even lately itself, I think Celcon has disposed of 40% of their stake to some fund. And they make a lot of money out from there too, you know.
Okay, so now you're going through a feasibility study. It's a 6-month study. Results due out in June, July period. What are the things you're going to be looking out for in this venture? What are the pros and cons, the risks?
Actually, in terms of this kind of project itself, of course, we have to go through a process of feasibility study and environmental study. If those are actually viable, then of course we'll continue with it. But if it's not viable, of course we'll stop there. But if the viability is there, basically the risk itself will be very, very much less, you know.
Okay, and the other part of your expansion strategy involves power. You've got about 20% of a diesel-fired power plant in Phnom Penh, Cambodia. That's under an 18-year concession, but that ends in 2015, Dato. Mm-hmm. What's the plan?
I think given the opportunity itself, if we of course we would like to actually expand on the power sector, you know, and power itself, we do have good success in Cambodia, so and I think one of the another listed company itself that we actually own, they actually have another project. So maybe, you know,
Leader Universal, yeah, that's your sister company.
Correct.
Okay. With common shareholders.
Sorry?
Common shareholders.
Yeah, common shareholders, that's correct.
Okay. So what is the plan? Are you looking for more concessions in that country or in other countries?
Of course, if you look at the... this particular country itself, they are actually short of power. They are really short of power, you know. And we can basically look at new projects, or you know, places like even Indonesia, if you really want, you know. And of course, Cambodia is one option itself that we can actually look at, you know.
On the subject of financials, Dato, you've talked about how at zero gearing and about 300, well, giving you about 300 million to play with, you're quite financially safe to raise your debt levels. But on the valuations front, you traded about 3.6 times current year earnings, about 3.3 times annualized EBITDA as well. The thing is, the markets don't like companies which are too diversified. Is that going to be a problem for valuation wise for GUH Golding going forward?
Of course, there are two schools of thought. You know, one school of thought is that, you know, you do what you know best. But for us itself, I think when we started, we already a diversified company. In a way that, you know, we are involved in properties, we are involved in electronic, we are involved in electrical, but we are, of course, after back in 2008, we ceased the operation of electrical because it was too competitive. Then in
trading, trading of products.
Trading of products. We were involved in this electrical lighting, ceiling fans, you know. And you know, if you look at electronic itself, like what you mentioned earlier, it's very cyclical. So we thought that maybe dependencies of 90% itself, maybe it's too much. So we started, you know, doing a little bit on property, a little bit on a plantation. Property is what we actually inherited, and then we do some plantation, start with a small operation, and then expand it further. And then, of course, and then we strategize ourselves, and then going forward, we will look at concessionary projects.
Of course.
And those concessionary projects is power and water is our key areas. Of that.
Given where your valuations are, about 3 to 4 times earnings, not very good, of course, not very compelling. Is privatization a real option for you guys, for GUH? In fact, have merchant bankers come to see you already?
This is always a possibility itself, you know, and I think even back a few years ago, I was actually talking about taking it private, you know. It's an option itself that's open, you know.
And it continues to be an option. How many years, what kind of time frame have you given for this expansion strategy to work? What's your internal target?
I think the strategy itself is actually working. If you look at it, we are going into plantation, and the plantation is actually working very well. We gone into power. Power has been very successful. You know, and we are expanding our land bank, and of course water. You know, if you look at diversification itself, we are actually not really doing something itself that we don't have the knowledge on. You know, if we are actually expanding on our existing businesses, and we are. And our existing businesses have been in property plantation. The only thing itself which is new to us, which is actually water.
Water,
but,
yeah.
But even when we started on water itself, we actually formed a team of people itself before even we actually gone into the extent of dealing with water. So we do have the expertise itself put in place before we actually go forward.
Okay, Dato, thank you so much for your thoughts and your time. That was Dato Kenneth Ng, the Chief Executive of GUH Holdings Berhad, telling the story of a 50-year-old family company and its transformation from electronics into power, water, property and plantation. I'm Kusu Chuang, BFM 89.9.
The BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by the CIMB Group, Southeast Asia's leading universal bank. BFM 89.9, the business station.